This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. So how did those negotiators feel about the nuclear deal in Iran now that they may have gotten a full night's sleep? Will the reality sink in as a powerful new era for the Middle East? Here is President Hassan Rouhani with a vote for this new era.
The page of the past 12-year period, which was accompanied by illusions from the world powers and the spreading of these illusions in society and public opinion, has completely turned, and a new chapter has begun.
It's also possible that once they've slept on it, the Iran nuclear deal may also look like a bad hangover. Here's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
They've gambled that in 10 years' time, Iran's terrorist regime will change while removing any incentive for it to do so. In fact, the deal gives Iran every incentive not to change.
There is a long history of cooperation between Iran and the United States, alongside a history of CIA coups and mutual suspicion. There is a powerful tradition of Iranian Jews enriching the culture of Iran for centuries. What do Iranians now say about all of these changes? What is the balance of suspicion and hope for the future among people who have a stake in it? Joining us is Raymond Iriami, an Iranian Jewish American attorney working in New York. Also with us is Narges Bajoli, founder of the Iranian Alliances Across Borders organization.
It's something that I'm very hopeful about, actually. I think it represents a moment in which finally, after 35 years, Iran can slowly begin to integrate into the international community. And it also presents an opportunity for those in Iran who are not a part of the political elite, who were really suffering under the sanctions, to see some sort of relief in the future.
Do you see it going back to the way it was before the revolution in 79?
No, I don't. And I'm actually, I guess, less optimistic than Narges is. I don't think this moment is much bigger than it is. I think this is strictly about seeking to ensure, and there's a lot of doubts and debates about that, to prevent Iran from going nuclear in the very immediate future of months, maybe years. I don't see this having necessarily positive ramifications for the rest of the issues relating to Iran. And I actually think this deal will do more to make sure that the regime does not change than doing anything for regime change to the extent that's anybody's goal.
And in the region, Iran has gained significantly since the Iraq War, in that Iraq is no longer really an antagonist. And in the 1980s, they fought a horrible war, Iran and Iraq. Now, Iran is on a much higher profile. But, is it better to engage them in this kind of regional power dimension, or is it better to confront them?
Well, there's no question that Iran has gained power. George Bush did a big favor to the Iranian government, taking out the major rival, and now Iran, be with the Shiite denomination, has now exerting influence all over Iraq and beyond. So over the years, we have empowered them, going back to the years of the post-revolution, the Iran-Iraq war, and now they are a force that they have to be dealt with. And look, this is really, at this point in time, the choice was between war and diplomacy. The United States has taken the option of diplomacy, and given what happened with the Iraq war and what a calamity that was, I'm not sure what better options the United States government had, because I don't think war would have been an option at this point.
What could change in your life, in the life of your family, in your existence here in the United States, or for family back in Iran, Narges?
Well, I mean, I think what this means for those of us in the United States with any sort of connection to Iran or not, you know, it remains to be seen sort of when sanctions are lifted, what the parameters of those laws then become afterwards, as far as any sort of connection between the United States and Iran and between Iranian Americans and those in Iran. But I think really, you know, sort of what this presents, and to go back to Raymond's point, is that the economic and political situation in Iran will not change unless these sanctions and this sort of specter of war is taken away, because actually one of the main groups that was calling for these negotiations to happen, for a deal to be made, were human rights and civil rights activists in Iran, because with the specter of war there, they were not allowed to do their activities. And now with the potential of this not being there any longer, they're able to kind of work on those issues, which makes it repressive to be able to do civil and political work in Iran. And I think that that's a positive. Now, you know, whether it means that the Islamic Republic will be there or not, I think that's something that activists on the Iran can work towards and shape in the way that they want. But under, in the past 5 years, it was impossible to do anything like that.
But more practically and on a personal level, Narges, do you know Iranians who want to, you know, reconnect with the rest of the world in a tangible way to sort of catch up on what's been going on in the outside world, to show people in the outside world what's been going on in Iran? Do you sense that there's that latent yearning?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Iran has a population of about 75 million people. Over half of that population is under the age of 35. These are young people who are very connected on the internet. And this is a generation and a group of people who very much yearn to be in touch with the rest of the world. They're highly educated, extremely creative. All of that to say that from the cultural level to the education level, there are people in the universities, in civil society, and across the art world in Iran who are very much looking forward to being in touch and to having these sorts of exchanges be able to happen at this point. I mean, there are so many university groups that would like to be in contact with university groups outside of Iran that haven't been able to be because of these sorts of things. There are a lot of academics who are looking to have their work published abroad, to be able to come to conferences, to be able to invite scholars from abroad into Iran to talk about latest developments, whether in science and technology or the social sciences. And these present opportunities for that realm.
Raymond, do you think there's an option at all for Iran and the Jewish community around the world to reignite the proud narrative of Judaism inside Iran in Persia?
Nothing would make me happier for that to happen. I'm actually, I do happen to be of a Jewish background, and I grew up as an Iranian Jew in Iran up to the age of 10. Obviously, the Jewish history in Iran dates back to 2,700 years. The Jews have been in Iran longer than just about most any other population in Iran. There's a very proud history there, and the population has decreased in recent decades because of the exodus after the Iranian Revolution. I'm pretty proud that there is still a Iranian Jewish community still staying in Iran. I think that's a testament to the Jewish people of Iran, to the non-Jewish people of Iran, just the fact that for Jews, they made Iran home. Iran is their home, and I hope they stay there, and I hope that over the, like, it will take some decades and centuries for the Jewish community to grow in Iran and become a more vital part of the Iranian community. But again, I thank God they have managed to persevere.
Can you both take me back to the moments that you remember about the sort of family mythology of how you left Iran and how you might want to reverse that and actually return on some level? You were 10 when you left, Raymond?
I was 10, and I would love to, when I have children of my own, to take them back to show that, hey, this is where your parents grew up. This is your ancestral homeland, and teach them about all of the beautiful aspects of the country, the culture, and the civilization. And I'm told that from people who have gone back to their own homelands, that my going back will be a bittersweet experience, because even though there will be a lot of joy with going back to see the streets where I grew up, there will also be some sadness involved, because I will realize, and I kind of already know it now, that the streets where I grew up may no longer belong there.
Mm. What's your most vivid memory of that home?
Well, I have so many memories from the revolution, from the war, from how when the war started, my priority was, okay, well, can we go exchange my birthday gifts before the war really starts? When the sirens would ring in those early days, hiding in the basements, but within weeks being back on the roof to watch the anti-aircraft missiles fly, because it just became a source of entertainment. I have memories of being treated as a Jew in some ways, actually with a lot of respect, because they felt that we would not harm other people because we're Jewish. So there was some positive stereotypes that went along with being Jewish. Just in terms of all aspects of life, the revolution happening, the regime changing, that was very scary, and I was a very young boy at the time. So, you know, that was really home. And again, I would love to go back.
And what are your memories of departure?
Well, I was extremely young.
Right.
My family ended up having to leave very hurriedly because my father was a leftist activist. And after they tried to stay after the revolution, but after a while, it just wasn't feasible for them because a lot of their friends were being taken away. And so we left very hurriedly through Europe and ended up in the United States. I have very, you know, little memories of the time except for the sirens from the war. Those, you know, the sort of very traumatic things that were happening have stayed in my mind. But I've gone back many times and lived there in my adult life. And so those, for me, the Iran that I know is more so as a teenager and an adult than as a child.
And it's alive and well if the governments and the international community get out of the way. You could live there.
I did live there for pretty much my entire 20s. And, you know, it's a difficult question. I've always thought about, could I live there for longer? And I think that until certain social changes are made, it would be something that at this point in my life, no longer being an adventurous, you know, 20-something-year-old and thinking about other things at this point, it would be something that I would have to think harder about. And certain changes have to be made within Iran first.
Raymond Iriami is an Iranian Jewish American attorney working here in New York. Nargiz Bajoli is founder of the Iranian Alliances Across Borders. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.